Okay, so we want to start right here. First off, we want to welcome you to our emergency preparedness class. I'm Joe Kearse, and our hope is just simply that the suggestions you're about to hear are going to be a benefit for the future of your family. Can you hear me back there in the very back? Everybody good? Okay. Our goal simply is this, and that's to educate you on items that can keep you safe, healthy, and comfortable in case of a sudden emergency. And that can be a failure of civility, it could be a natural disaster, a volcano, who knows. These items and ideas that they may or may not be suitable for your situation. We have assimilated these through personal experience in my youth living off the grid. And we are avid hikers, so many of the products that we suggest to you we have used. The ones we have not, we will tell you about. And just because we're suggesting them does not mean they are the best products. It's just what we are familiar with. There's a plethora of things that are available in every aspect of preparedness anymore. So you may have an idea or an item that fits your circumstance with greater comfort, so feel free to share that with us before you leave so we can improve our information. Or if you've used any of the products that we suggest and you find them inferior, let us know. Our goal is simply this. You know, knowledge is an awesome thing, but if you never put it and you never take everything you hear about preparedness and putting up certain medicines or whatever, and then you get stuck with nothing, all that's done you no good to have all that knowledge. So our goal is to get every family and every person listening and here today to just simply recognize that you have to start with the first step. So starting with a 1 week or more storehouse, our federal government themselves have asked us to suggest to you a 72-hour preparedness program to where you can live without any outside help or assistance as far as utilities or food. So our goal, we may miss it by a few minutes, is to teach for 50 minutes, then we'll take a break, then followed by another 50 minutes. So here we go. We want to look at some survival foods. I don't know how many of you are familiar with edible insects and edible plants. If you're familiar with edible insects or edible plants, just lift your hand. Also, I don't know how many of you are familiar with starting a fire. One of the methods requires two sticks and a piece of twine or a shoelace. And then, of course, if you've lived outdoors for long off the grid, there is the substitute for toilet paper. And they don't think they have Sears catalog anymore, but we still have leaves. So if you came to this class to learn about survival, you came to the wrong class, because this class is not about survival. This class is about being prepared so that you can be ready and comfortable and you won't have to worry about eating bugs and plants and using leaves. So we're glad that you are here. Before we begin, one of the ways that you can identify if you are someone that has taken your family preparedness seriously, nobody be alarmed, but I'm going to just throw a few things at you. Number one, you need to ask yourself, do you have an emergency exit plan at your home and work? Have you ever even considered that? If not, you probably are somebody that needs to look at being prepared a little more. Does your automobile have a bug out bag? And does it have a pair of good walking shoes in it? And do you have working fire alarms? 7 people die a day of fires in the United States every day. Do you have good working fire alarms in your house? The 3 main causes of death by fire in a home is cooking, is smoking, and is the heating situation. Do you have fire extinguishers at work? 38% of all fires are caused by cooking. So if you're someone that says no to all these questions, this would be a great place to start preparedness. Mark, carbon monoxide alarms, depending on your furnaces, or some things that we're going to be sharing with you for alternative utilities. We'll get to the 10 topics here in just a moment. Do you know and have you taught your spouse how to turn off all the utilities that come to your home? Are these things that are Greek and foreign to you? If there are, then we certainly want to get this on the list of things that you can begin to apply knowledge to and the know-how. And then, do you have adequate locks on your windows and doors? 62% of all burglaries and thefts in America occur between 9 a.m. in the morning and 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And then I put, do you have a secured visual entry system? In other words, just even a peek hole or a camera to where before you open the door to whomever's on the other side, you are aware of who it is that you're opening that door to. I also want to play this little game before we begin. And some of these things will seem extreme, but we don't get really extreme in this class at all. This is a beginning class. We want to play the game that you and your spouse are at work, and the kids are in school, and all of a sudden all communication and transportation has just gone out. I'm sure that you've made a plan of how your family is going to reconnect. And if your home isn't an option, I know you've already made a choice as to what other house or location is your designated meeting place. And if mom and dad aren't an option any longer, who is? Write a plan and post it. Where do we meet? What timetable do we hold to? And what is our rehearsed plan? So I'm covering a tremendous amount of material in this class to get your thoughts provoked, to understand that well-meaning people every day that have high IQ and probably greater intelligence than I have, that have multiple ideas of how to deal with things, are caught off guard because they do not have the tools in which to work with. The 10 commandments that I feel like are of utmost importance, and you can get, depending on your teachers and their level of experience, what they will choose. But the 10 commandments of preparedness as I see them is: number one, breathable air, drinkable water, edible food, livable shelter, correct sanitation and hygiene, medical necessities, alternative utilities, whether do I stay put or evacuate, and should I evacuate, or am I familiar with alternative travel routes and alternative transportations? And then we will get to the last of the 10 lessons, which will handle the well-equipped go bag. And I will tell you right now, as a person that has experience in hiking and packing packs, that I do not call it a go bag nor a bug out bag. I think that is a very poor name for it. I believe the proper name should be called a get home bag. And you'll see why before we complete these classes. I want to read this, and this is a little extreme, and it will help us think, because we have no idea what the future holds. Any civilization that's run as long as we have has faced some types of restart, and it usually is not a good situation that brings about that restart. However, I'm sure our government has everything under control. But should they not, I want to read to you from a very educated man, and you will be. I will be giving you the websites that you can write down. I think about 28 websites, so all of this information will be a good place for you to start, that you can find the items and things that I suggest. And the website for this is right on the screen. It is SHTF School for StuffHitTheFanSchool.com. And what this is, it's written by a survivor, or an educated man, that was in the collapse in Bosnia. My wife and I were there about a year and a half ago. And it's still a very war-torn area. But anyway, this is his letter. It's going to be about a six-minute read. And then what will happen is, when we take his experience, because he has been through surviving with 15 members of his family, and obviously they did not all survive, it will allow us to ascertain and understand, as we go into each of these 10 lessons, the things that may be pertinent for our family's welfare. He says, "I am from Bosnia. Between 92 and 95, it was hell. For 1 year, I lived and survived in a city with 6,000 people without water, electricity, gasoline, or medical help, civil defense, distribution services of any kind, or traditional services centralized rules. Money soon became worthless. Strength was in numbers. A man living alone, getting killed and robbed was just a matter of time, even if he was armed, if he was alone. The following is my experience. Our city was blockaded by the army for 1 year, and life in the city turned into total... We had no army, no police. We only had armed groups. Those armed groups protected homes and families. When it all started, some of us were better prepared, but most of our neighboring families had enough food for only a few days. Some had a pistol, and a few had an AK-47 or one shotgun. After a month or two, gangs start operating, destroying everything. Hospitals, for example, turned into slaughterhouses. There were no more police, and about 80% of the hospital staff had left. I got lucky. My family at the time was fairly large, 15 people in a large house, and we had accumulated 6 pistols and 3 AK-47s, and we survived, at least most of us. The Americans helpfully dropped MREs every 10 days to help the blockade city. There was never enough. Some very few had gardens. It took 3 months for the first rumors to spread of men dying from hunger and cold. We removed all the doors and window frames from abandoned houses, ripped up the floors, and burned the furniture for heat. Many died from diseases, especially from the water. 2 in my own family perished. We drank mostly rainwater. We ate a lot of pigeons and a lot of rats. As I said, money soon became worthless, and we turned to an exchange. For a tin can of Tushka, which is Soviet Spam, you could have a woman. It is hard to speak of, but it is true, because most of the women who sold themselves were desperate young mothers in need to feed their children. Arms, ammunition, candles, lighters, antibiotics, gasoline, batteries, and food. We fought for these things like animals. And in these situations, you need to know it all changes. Men become absolute monsters. It is disgusting. Strength was in numbers, and a man living alone getting killed and robbed was just a matter of time. To me and today, my family and I are well prepared. I am well armed and I have experience. It does not matter what happens, an earthquake, war, tsunami, aliens, terrorists, economic collapse, uprising. The important part is that something is going to happen. Here's my experience. Number one, you cannot make it on your own. So don't think you can stay apart from your family. You need to prepare together and choose reliable friends. The city was divided into communities along streets. Our street, 15 to 20 homes, had patrols of five armed men every week to watch for the gangs and for enemies. All the exchanges occurred in the street. About 5 kilometers away was an entire street for trading. It was all well organized, but going there was extremely dangerous because of the snipers. You could also get robbed by the bandits. I only went there twice when I needed something really rare, which was medicine, mainly antibiotics. Nobody uses automobiles at this point. The streets are blockaded by wreckage and abandoned cars. Gasoline's expensive. If one needed to go somewhere, that was only done at night. We never traveled alone or in a group that was too large, always 2 to 3 men, all armed, traveling swift in the shadows. There were many gangs, 10 to 15 men strong. We heard of some as large as 50 men, but there were also many normal men like you and I, good fathers and grandfathers, who killed and robbed. There were no good and bad men. Most were in the middle and ready for the worst. What about wood? Your home city is surrounded by woods, so why did you burn doors and furniture? Well, there were not that many woods around the city. It was very beautiful. Restaurants, cinemas, schools, airports, even trees in the city and park. We all cut these down for fuel in the first 2 months. When you have no electricity for cooking and heating, we burned anything that burned. Furniture, doors, flooring. Wood burns quickly. We had no suburbs or suburban farms. The enemy was in the suburbs. We were surrounded. Even in the city, you never knew who the enemy was at any given point. What knowledge was useful to us in that period? To imagine the situation a bit better, you should know it was particularly a return to the Stone Age. For example, I had a container of cooking gas, but I did not use it for heat. That would be too expensive. I attached a nozzle to it and made myself and used it to fill lighters. Lighters were precious. If a man brought an empty lighter, I would fill it and he would give me a tin of food or maybe a candle. As I was a paramedic in these conditions, my knowledge was my wealth. Be curious and skilled in these conditions. The ability to fix things is more valuable than gold. Items and supplies will inevitably run out, but your skills will keep you fed. I wish to say this. Learn to fix things, shoes or people. My neighbor, example, knew how to make kerosene for lamps, so therefore he never had to go hungry. If you had 3 months to prepare now, what would you do? Run away from the country. Just joking. Today I know everything can collapse really fast. We have stockpile of food, hygiene items, batteries. I live in a very secure flat and own a home with a shelter in a village 5 kilometers away, another 6 months' supply stored there also. That's a village. Most people there have now become well prepared. The war had taught them. I have 4 weapons, 2,000 rounds for each. I have a garden and learned gardening. I also have developed good instincts. You know, when everyone around you tells you it's all going to be fine, it means it's about to collapse. I have strength to do what I need to protect my family, because when it all collapses, you must be ready to do bad things to keep your children alive and protect your family. Surviving on your own is practically impossible. Even you're armed and ready, if you're alone, you'll die. I've seen this too many times. It happens. Families and groups are well prepared with skills and knowledge in various fields are much better. What should you stockpile? Well, that depends. If you plan to live by theft, then just weapons and ammo, lots of ammo. If not, then you need more food, hygiene items, batteries, accumulators, little trading items like knives, lighters, flints, soap, alcohol, the type that keeps well. The cheapest whiskey is a good trade item. Many people died from insufficient hygiene. You will need simple items in great amounts, for example, garbage bags and lots of them, along with toilet paper. Non-reusable dishes and cups, you'll need lots of them. I know that because we didn't have any at all. As for me, a supply of hygiene items is perhaps more important than food. You can shoot a pigeon, and you can find a plant to eat. You cannot find or shoot disinfectant or toilet paper. Disinfectant, detergents, bleaches, soaps, gloves, masks, first aid skills, washing wounds and burns. Perhaps you'll find a doctor and will not be able to pay him. Learn to use antibiotics. You must have a stockpile of them. You should also choose the simplest of weapons. I'm going to skip that. You must own small, unnoticeable items. For example, a generator is good, but 1,000 big lighters are much better. A generator will attract attention if there's trouble, but 1,000 lighters are compact, cheap, and can always be traded. We collected rainwater into 4 large barrels and then boiled it. There was a small river, but the water in it became very dirty, very fast, and dangerous. It's also important to have containers for water, barrels, and buckets. What about gold and silver? Well, yes, I personally traded all the gold in the house for ammunition. Sometimes we got our hands on money, Deutschmarks. We bought some things for them, but this was rare and prices were astronomical. For example, one can of beans was $40. The local money quickly became worthless. Everything we needed, we traded for through barter. Was salt expensive? Absolutely, but coffee and cigarettes were even more expensive. I had lots of alcohol and traded it without problems. Alcohol consumption grew, by my estimation, over 10 times as compared to at peacetime. Perhaps today it's more useful to keep a stock of cigarette lighters and batteries. They take up less space. At this time, I was not a survivalist. We had no time to prepare. Several days before it hit the fan, the politicians kept telling us over the TV everything was going according to plan, no reason to be concerned. Was it difficult to purchase firearms? After the war, we had guns in every house. The police confiscated lots of guns at the beginning of the war. Most of them that weren't registered, we were able to hide. Now I have one legal gun that I have license for. Under the law, that's called a temporary collection. If there is unrest, the government will seize all the registered guns. Never forget that. You know there are many people who have one legal gun, but also illegal guns. If that one gets seized, if you had good trade goods, you might be able to get a gun in a tough situation. But remember, the most difficult time is the first days, and perhaps you won't have enough time to find a weapon to protect your family. To be disarmed in a time of chaos and panic is a very bad idea. In my case, there was a man who needed a car battery, and I was able to trade for one of the shotguns he had. I'll bring this to a close. What about security? Our defense was very primitive. We weren't ready, and we used what we could. The windows were shattered. The roof was in a horrible state after the bombings. The windows were blockaded with sandbags, and we blockaded them with rocks. I blockaded the fence gate with wreckage and garbage. We used a ladder to get across this barricade. When I came home, I asked someone inside to pass over the ladder. We had a fellow on our street that completely barricaded himself in his home, and he broke a hole in the wall to create just a small passageway, like the eye of a needle. Many would seem that this would be strange, but the most protected houses are the ones that are looted and destroyed first. It was my area of the city where there were beautiful homes with walls, dogs, alarms, and barred windows. People attacked those first. Some held out, but most couldn't. It all depended on how many guns and how much experience they had. I think defense is very important, but it must be carried out unobtrusively. If you are in a city and it hits the fan, you need a simple, non-flashy place with lots of guns and ammo. Now, folks, I'm not going to speak on guns and ammo in this class. I'm just sharing this letter. I don't know how you feel about that. So make your house as unattractive as you can. I've got that mastered. Right now, I own a steel door, but that's against the first wave of chaos. After that passes, I'll leave the city to rejoin a larger group of people with my friends and family. There were some situations, there's no need for the details, but we always had superior firepower and a brick wall we built on our side. We also constantly kept someone watching the streets. Quality organization is paramount in the case of gang attacks. Shooting is constantly heard. Our perimeter was defended primitively, and all the exits were barricaded and had little firing slits. Inside, we had at least five family members ready for battle at any time, and one man in the street hidden to view from a shelter. We stayed home through the day, and at first, the weak perish, W-E-A-K. Then the rest fight. During the day, the streets are practically empty because of gangs and sniper fire. Defense was oriented towards short-range combat only. Many died if they went out to gather information. It's important to remember we had no information. There's no radio. There's no TV. Only rumors and nothing else. And there is no organized army. Every man fought. We had no choice. Every man was armed, ready to defend himself. I'm on the last page. You should not wear quality items should you leave your house. You will be murdered for them. Let me tell you something. If it hits tomorrow, I'll be humbled. I'll look like everyone else. In other words, I'll look desperate and fearful. I may even shout and act a little insane. Pretty clothing's excluded altogether. I will not go out in some new tactical outfit and shout, "I've come, you're doomed, bad guys." I'll stay inside, well-armed, well-prepared, waiting and evaluating my possibilities with my best, most trusted friends or family. Super defenses, super guns are meaningless. If people think they should steal your things, that you're profitable, they will. It's only a question of time and the amount of guns on hand. I wanted to get to this. How is the situation with toilets? Well, you'll use shovels and a patch of earth near the house. Does it seem dirty? It is. We washed with rainwater in the river, but most of the time the later was too dangerous. We had no toilet paper, and if we had any, I would have traded it for anything. I wouldn't have traded it for anything. It was a dirty business. Let me give you a piece of advice. You need guns and ammo first, and second, literally everything else depends on space and money you have. If you forget something, there'll always be someone to trade with. But if you forget weapons and ammo, there'll be no access to trade for. I don't think big families are extra mouths. Big families mean both more guns and strength, and from here, everyone prepares on his own. How do people treat the sick and the injured? Most injuries are from gunfire. And I must tell you, without a specialist and without equipment, if an injured or wounded man, even if he found a doctor, he only had a 30% chance of survival rate. This isn't the movies. People die from infections, from superficial wounds. I had antibiotics only for 3 to 4 uses for my family. And people die foolishly, many from infections. Simple diarrhea kills you in a few days without medicine with limited amounts of water. There were many skin diseases and food poisonings. Nothing to it until there's a problem. Many use local plants and pure alcohol, enough for the short term, but useless in the long term. Hygiene is very important, as well as having as much medicine as possible, especially antibiotics. So now you have heard from an experienced survivor that has been through when all chaos breaks loose. I want to cover our first of the Ten Commandments of preparedness. It will seem kind of superficial and illogical. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the 3-3-3 rule. It's a pretty good rule for survivalists. You can survive 3 minutes without air. You can survive 3 days without water, and you can survive about 3 weeks without food. The first thing we're going to look at is breathable air. And the first commandment is we have to have oxygen to make it. You're looking at the smoke cloud from 9/11. My brother only lived a few blocks from there in Manhattan. And obviously, many people died because of their lungs filling up with dust, chemicals. The three things that, actually four things that our government or that any person understands about breathable air is you need to protect yourself from inhaling smoke and dust, getting it caught in your lungs, chemical or biological or nuclear fallout dust particles. Now, there is more than you can ever look up on the internet. I'm going to give you allergybegone.com and recommend you a HEPA N100 Moldex respirator with an exhale valve. Keep some of those in your get-home bag, in your car, in your house. And I'm just going to share with you under an extreme that the government would say we are under a some type of influenza attack or bacterial attack or, God help us, a nuclear fallout dust cloud from the West. You'll want duct tape. Duct tape is something you cannot have enough of. You will see that all through this class. You can do anything. You can get rid of warts with duct tape. You'll want plastic sheeting. And plastic sheeting, if you'll look up the government websites, the reason you need duct tape, plastic sheeting, and the reason that you need a Moldex mask is with HEPA filtration. If you had that and you were stuck in a building, I don't know how many of you have been through training and getting out of a high-rise building. A lot of the new high-rise buildings have air-forced vent situations in the stairwells that keep smoke out of it. The older buildings, they become chimneys. You need to find out where you are, what you're going through. But just keeping a simple 3 or 4 masks could save your life. The next thing that we recommend is a disposable rain suit. All these things we're recommending to you, it is not just for one category. You will find where there are multi-uses as we move through the 10 categories. And the purpose for this is you'll need a set of goggles and plastic gloves. And this with the tape, you can protect yourself from any biological situation. If you're some extreme survivalist, and after class I'll just share with you the range of nuclear explosions, and it's not what you think at all. You would be shocked to know we can drop the bomb they dropped a little boy on Hiroshima in downtown Houston, and you'll live through it if you live outside of the 610 loop. So all this nuclear winter stuff's BS. It keeps people from being prepared to do anything. Anyway, won't get into that. Okay, so here are the items that we recommend to cover our first category of breathable air. You can go online. You want to get these face masks. They'll protect you from disease, duct tape, plastic sheeting, goggles, rubber gloves, rain suit or rubber suit. And then you'll be equipped as you prepare and go online and build your survivalist library to recognize the fact that you can protect yourself from biological, chemical warfare, all kinds of things with just these things, taping off the cracks in the windows and the doors around your home and keeping dust and things out. The second area we want to cover is we want to cover drinkable water. Now, there is no end to this. Essential drinking water, of course, without water. We live about 3 days whenever we have to be, not, I'm not talking about sitting around, but trying to move around. And of course, the Ten Commandments of healthy hydration, simply put, is this: 128-pound person should consume 2 quarts or a half gallon of water a day. A 256-pound person should drink a gallon a day, 128 ounces. And this is nothing more important than when you are under stressful situations. The reason we're giving you this is because the bare minimum of water that you would want to put up just for drinking consumption is a gallon of water per day in the family that you're taking care of. That's just simply to survive. That has nothing to do with hygiene, nothing to do with cooking. That's just to drink. So when you think about it, that means if there are 5 in your family, that means that roughly a little under 5 gallons a day is needed to drink. You say, well, we don't drink that much water. That's because you've got all those sodas in your house, and you've got all that Kool-Aid in your house, and you've got all, you consume that much liquid every day, trust me. And so the first thing that you want to do is we prepare ourselves that this preparation process that you're going to learn about in these 10 steps is not something no one you know can get prepared in 30 days. This is a project. It's an ongoing project. But the first thing you want to do, because we all assume air will be around to breathe, that didn't catch our attention, but water is of the utmost importance. So the first thing you've got to do is identify your source of water. All of a sudden you go to the sink, and whether you have a well or whether you are on utilities, municipalities, there's no longer anything coming out of the spigot. What do you do? So you need to identify your source of water now, considering that there will no longer be water coming out of your faucet. Then you need to figure out the containers you're going to need, how much containage you're going to have to survive for whatever length of time that you've set for your family. Is it 1 week, 30 days, whatever? And of course, the sources of water will be what you have stored in a container. If you have a water well, if you have a lake, a pond, a stream, and rivers, we've made such awesome inroads in water filtration that any source of water anymore can be turned into drinking water without having to boil it for 30 minutes, which takes a lot of energy expansion or expendables to build, burn a fire, or whatever. Rain's a good source. In an emergency, the toilet tank, not the bowl. Of course, in a water heater. The needed water storage vessels that you will need are going to be 1 gallon jugs, 5 gallon pails. You're going to need large and small funnels, and 55 gallon and 35 gallon drums. It's amazing how these food grade buckets and things are quite expensive. So if you're someone that I'm about to walk through this, there's various ways that you can handle a continued water supply. But if you're someone that has a lake, a stream nearby, or a pond, you're blessed. Or if you have a water well, we will show you how to get water out of your well, and you won't even need electricity. And that's quite the blessing. It's a never-ending source of water. So all of you already know this, I'm sure, but whenever you get a vessel to store water in, you need to be sure that it either has a number 1 or number 7 in the triangle that's embedded in the plastic. Those are your food-grade plastics, a 1 or a 7. Something my wife and I have used for many years now, and if you're a missionary on the field or you're an avid backwoods person, Berkey has been around forever. Now, I want to express to you that there are other brands that may be less expensive, and there are other brands that may be quite as good. I'm only expressing to you what we've experienced. Berkey stainless steel water gravity filter, a filter 50 gallons a day, 50,000 gallons per filter pack. It's the one that says the Travel Berkey. The stainless steel unit, you can take that and you can knock the leaves and debris off the top of water, dip it down into the water. It will take everything out. You can even filter the food coloring out of a Coke if you pour it through it. It is 100%, 99.9% effective at taking bacterial. It'll take fluoride out of water. It'll take chemicals out of water. And of course, take all the diseases that cause the problems that we do not want. And they also make the Sport Berkey, which is that, it looks like a water bottle. And that thing is good for, it's $28. Replacement cartridge is $13. It's something I recommend to put in your pack. It's good for 100 gallons. You can just dip that down in any water source, and then you squeeze the water and suck it through that filter, and it's safe to drink. So we see where not being prepared and becoming sick because you don't have clean drinking water is only because you've not taken any necessary steps. Let me go on with this. Another thing, Katadyn Hiker Pro, back when we started teaching this years ago, this was the way to go, but they've improved so much filtration. I want to give you the one that I have not used, but I've heard great things about. Maybe some of you are familiar with it, and that is the Life Straw. LifeStraw.com, you see the man, this thing weighs 2 ounces. It only costs $25. It filters 264 gallons of drinking water. It removes 99.9% of all bacteria, including E. coli, and there is no shelf life. In other words, you can put it on the shelf for years. So this is something that we will be upgrading to put into our get-home bag. You just can't go wrong for $25 to have 264 gallons. I mean, that's going to get you through half a year with no problem, just one person, you know. So that's something you may want to check into. Drinking water is essential. If you have a if you have a well, a 4-inch or a 2.5-inch well, if you have a 4-inch well, you'll want to look up this. It's called survivalunlimited.com. At the end of the class, I have a page that shares every one of these websites and others as well. But this is the absolute best thing you could do if you're somebody that's got money. If you've got money, it's easier to prepare. This thing fits down the sucker rod in your current well. It will literally pump from a 300-foot head below the surface of the water and pressure your tank, and you'll never know you've lost electricity. It also is available a 12-volt pump that you can attach to this thing and attach it to your car battery, and it'll pump it for you. It will pressurize, just like your well will, the tank that you have now. So this is an awesome option. It is high dollar, but if you've got a well. Now let me just throw this out. I don't have it in my notes. When I was a youngster, we lived off the grid at times for a month or so at a time in a very little cabin. And we had a well. Many of you may have experienced this. It probably was a 4-inch well. However, have you remember the buckets? They're about 3.5 inches around and about 3.5 feet tall, and you lower them down. In a pinch, you could pull your well, the piping going down your well, and you could make your own bucket to lower down on the well to get water. Okay. Let's get back into this. So let's say that you don't, for some reason, want to buy a water purification system, which that's the number one thing you need to look into. There's many of them. I noticed people got them for sale right back here. The way that you purify water, number one, you can go buy some unscented bleach, or you can buy some iodine tablets. Real quickly, has anyone here ever drank water that's been purified with iodine tablets? Let me see your hand. Sucks, doesn't it? Bad stuff. Now, if you're not real thirsty, they make an anti-iodine taste that then you can put in there. That's the worst way to go. But buy a bottle of them, stick them in your backpack if you need to, but if you can't afford a water filter. But if you do not buy a filtration system, there's three ways to make water safe to consume. Number one's the worst way. That's the iodine tablets. Follow the label on the bottle. You can get them at Walmart. But even an easier way is if you will begin. Now, bleach is something you want to begin to stock up on. You'll see multiple purposes for it. But basically, you add 8 drops of unscented chlorine per gallon of water to filter it. And then you stir it and you let it set 30 minutes. Drinkable. If it's unfiltered water, in other words, you had to knock leaves and dirt and scum off the water, then it's 16 drops per gallon. You let it set for 30 minutes. If you cannot do any of those things, then any water, I'm not so sure about the chemical content, but the disease, if you'll bring water to a rolling boil and let it boil for 30 minutes, then you will have killed the disease. This group of army and military junk in the back of the buildings here, that's my little gig. We got into that because we're hikers and we wanted good products. What you're looking at that we highly recommend, and I just have to sell them, is that a 2-quart canteen. When we started fighting in the deserts, you know, packing a 1-quart canteen is like packing a water bottle. So they went to the 1/2-gallon canteens. And these are awesome. They roll up. They're made out of a PVB-free material. You can freeze them. And two of them is a gallon of water. This is a great way for your get-home bag. Anyway, let me move on. So what do I need for drinkable water? Number one, you've got to identify your source now to figure out what are we going to do when the water quits. We need to choose a transporting system. How am I going to get it from the source that I've chosen to my home? We need food-grade storage barrels, jugs, we need funnels, we need to choose a filtration system, we need some unscented bleach, iodine tablets would be my last choice, or a means and vessels to boil water. And remember that about 1 gallon per day per person. You can go to Walmart and buy great water filtrations, and I have not used the Life Straw, but that will be the next thing I check into. We have used the Berkey. We use it every day in our home. We have a 4-inch well. We live on some properties, and we still filter that water. Okay, the next thing we want to look at is edible food. It is the third thing on our emergency preparation of the Ten Commandments. Remember the 3-3-3 rule. You can live 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. And so as we look at this, there are, in my estimation, it is a four-step plan in putting up food. And each of you will come to your own conclusion. So the way that we have chosen to break these classes down is to bring to you what we have found to be the most affordable for our budget. We eat organic. We have for years. And so it costs a little more money, but we like doing without the poison. We want to live till the Lord comes. So we're going about to look at a four-step plan to put up food. Doesn't mean it's the plan you need to follow. It's the one that we have followed. And the reason being is because we start with the least expensive and then work our way to where if something would happen, we get caught and haven't been able to do it all, we at least have made progress. And so our first idea is this. Number one, we understand that, you know, regardless of who you are, you're going to have a woman of 40 years age or a man 40 years of age. It's just lightly active. You'll be more active if there's a situation. 6-foot-tall, 200-pound man needs 2,600 calories a day. A 5-foot, 6-inch woman, 140 pounds, needs 1,850 calories a day. So I don't eat that many calories. You're sitting in front of the TV, but you start having to get out and do some things, and you're not driving everywhere you go. It's going to change. So we recognize that as we decide what foods to put up, let's go ahead and take the next step and realize that we need carbs, we need proteins, and we need fats. And you see the figures on those. Calories alone are not going to maintain your health, and health is everything in any situation, but even more so in a disaster type deal. So the nutrition in calories needs to be from carbs, proteins, and fats, and you need vitamins, minerals, and photochemicals from the green. This keeps your organs and tissues and your energy levels in good health. Folks, you can live a long time if you get an organ that goes bad on you. Organ goes bad because it filters all the poisons, or it's not anyway. So our first line of the four-prong preparation for foods is canned goods. Canned goods are cheap, and what we see is you say, well, I don't have enough space to store them. Well, we want to remember also food for those of you that have pets you're going to need to put up. You can store 324 canned goods under one king-size bed. And that's if you only just put it one can high. You got a taller bed, and then you're going to have other beds in the house. You can, and I'm telling you things from personal experience, you can put 400 pounds of dry goods that come in the food storage 6-gallon super pails in a 30-inch by 32-inch space. I have over 2,000 pounds in one closet, just one little closet. So storage is not what you think when it comes to storing food. And you haven't even started being creative. Let's look real quickly at why we say let's look at canned goods for our first line of defense. Anymore, it's a law, but some of the canned goods when you buy them are still in codes, and you have to call the manufacturer to understand the code to know the expiration dates. I don't mess with those. When you look at any canned meat, they are good for about 4 years. Actually, salmon about 6 years. So this ought to let you know whenever you go to the grocery store and you read the expiration date and you say, wow, this is good till next year, you're eating something that's 4 or 5 years old already. So when you get the fresh batch, which you want to check every time you go to Walmart or Sam's, salmon will be 6 years until it expires. Now, canned vegetables, about 3 years. Fruits, you can read all this. Nuts, 2 years. Powdered milk, dried fruits. What you're going to find out is anything with oils in it goes rancid very quickly, except for one kind of oil that we highly recommend. So if you put someone that you're a chili buff and it's got tomato sauce, anything with tomato sauce is not going to last any time at all. Oils go rancid in about 6 months' time. The other thing we want to share with you is just because it's past the date of when they say it should not be eaten doesn't mean it's turned bad or it's poison. It just means it doesn't taste as good as it did. But I don't know where the nutritional value can go. It's in a sealed can. You can look that up online. So you can remember that shelf lives go beyond package dates. Step two. So step one, we recommend if you're someone that is yet to begin to prepare, begin to look at canned goods. It is the cheapest way for less preparation that we found to put up food. We don't eat canned goods. So we put them up, and then after they're expired, we give them away. But anyway, step two is food pantry is the next step you'd want to do is MREs, energy bars, and powdered protein drinks. These things are amazingly great when we get to survival situations. The Datrex, D-A-T-R-E-X, we recommend that highly because, and I don't think I've got that here, they're good to like 2,400 to 3,600 calorie bars. They taste like lemon. They are Coast Guard approved. The thing you'll like about them is you can throw them in the trunk of your car, and they are impervious to heat. They are impervious to cold for about 5 years, and it is a quick source of energy. How many of you have eaten an MRE just by the lifting of your hand? We took two of our grandkids hiking here a couple of weeks ago, a month ago maybe, and we let them, the MRE with the heaters. They're pretty remarkable things. Some MREs are a good thing to have on hand. Now, these are going to be things, whey protein powder. It's the latest for those of you that recognize you need more protein. These are things that should be your next line of defense because they're going to be for whenever you need to make a run or you need to do whatever and not have to do much food preparation. The third line of defense that we recommend is the longer-term food storage. So now when we go beyond canned goods, this may not interest you at all, but if you're someone that says, well, I want to put food up for a long period of time in case, there are three methods that we are familiar with, and I know that we have someone here selling freeze-dried foods that knows much more about that than I do. Number one, you can buy it packaged in super pails. Number two, you can get into the freeze-dried. And number three, you can get into the dehydrated. We have used the super pails, and the people, super pail of food, they come to 5 and 6 gallon barrels. They are airtight with Mylar foil. They're heated, they're sealed. The oxygen's pumped out of them. They're nitrogen flashed. We purchase these from Rainy Day Foods and BePrepared.com. And we have found this to be a very inexpensive way to get the nutrition. I make bread. You can sprout. You can do all kinds of things with real living grains, and they're very nutritious. Old timers have been eating them for years. This is the very cheapest way to put long food. Term food storage. As a matter of fact, when we look at the average shelf life, whenever you look at, say, black-eyed beans, 15 to 20 years put up like this. Kidney beans, 20 years. Soybeans. This chart that I'm giving you, you will find at Rainy Day Foods, all of these shelf lives, powdered eggs, 15 years. Refried beans, on and on and on. You'll find all this list. And of course, this is the actual food that has been hasn't been processed. It hasn't been cooked at all. When you look at a suggested 1 year, this just gives you a wild idea. When you look at people that have studied nutrition and have studied proper nutrition and survival situations, I'm going to just read this as quickly as I can. They say you need to put up for a man. A woman's about 20% less. But for a man, it takes 150 pounds of grain for the year, 75 pounds of beans, 200 pounds of wheat, 60 pounds of milk, 65 pounds of some type of sweetener, 5 to 10 pounds of salt, 25 to 30 pounds of fruit, 40 to 45 pounds of vegetables, 5 pounds of broth, 2 pounds of yeast, and 2 gallons of oil. You can do that. Buying grains, as I've suggested to you, for $1,225 a year per person. So if you want to put up a half a year supply, that's $600 each. And you will get all your proteins and nutritions that you need. Brown rice, anything with oil, will not last long. All right, let me move on. An item that I would recommend, now, and when we recommend these items, let me express to you, this is top of the line because we use it often to grind grains, beans, corn, whatever. We recommend Country Living Grain Mill. It's $429, and we bought ours. It was $100 less. It's already gone way up, but they are a lifetime investment. However, you will find other grain mills on the market that are much less. We recommend getting one that does not require, obviously, electricity. And before you buy one, come over and try ours, because when you see how much, at the top of the line, how much energy it takes to grind a pound of wheat, you will understand if you get a little cheapy, you are going to wear yourself out trying to grind a pound of wheat. Okay, step number four in your food pantry would be to plant a garden. And let me just express this. When you go to either one of those two places that we suggest that you buy foods from, you can buy cans of organic seeds. At least buy you some cans of seeds. A can of seeds means they put the whole garden in there, about 15 different types of vegetables, and they will store in a refrigerator or somewhere for several years. So that is the four-step process to putting up food. Then one last thing I'd like to make you aware of, all of us can do sprouts, very popular. The grains that we suggested, the beans, the wheats, these things are living foods, so you can sprout them right there and have an awesome supply of protein, greens, and photochemicals to enjoy life with, even in your own kitchen with just some damp cloths and some plastic. All right, so we don't want to forget comfort foods for the whole family. Of course, remember your pets. Comfort foods, folks, having something, all of us are comfort food eaters. Candies, cookies, crackers, cereal, popcorn, chocolates, chips, Kool-Aid, sodas, juice, syrup, honey. Honey, folks, is one of the best. It doesn't ever go bad. Coffee, tea, juice, wine, jelly, peanut butter, nuts, condiments, ketchup, mustard. Think it through and enjoy being prepared. Remember to rotate your food supply. I know I'm speaking rapidly, but it's out of my respect for your time. I want to just throw this plug in because it's something that I truly believe in, and that is coconut oil. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this miraculous food. You can eat it. It's delicious. You can use it. People that have creamed their coffee with it, this is one of the only creamers they'll go to. You'll lose weight. You can use it internally, externally. You can use it for lubricants. You can use it for sunburn. You can wash your hair in it. 101 uses for coconut at wellnessmama.com. We buy this from Wilderness Family Naturals. I just ordered another gallon jug of it. Here is why I find it of utmost importance. Number one, the health issue. Just study it. You'll get turned on to it. Number two, it's delicious. And we're talking about the coconut oil needs to be cold or expeller pressed, virgin organic. But the purpose of this is because you will need an oil to cook. You must have an oil to cook with. Coconut oil does not go rancid. It will 6 to 8 year shelf life if you don't take care of it, but you'll know because you'll be able to look into the container and see that. And even in your get home bag or your bug out bag, for those of you that don't have any way to cook or cooking utensils, you'll want to put a little jar or vitamin bottle of coconut oil in your bag so that you can put it in the bottom of your skillet and cook egg or whatever you happen to find. But you can eat it. It's very nutritious. If you get sunburn, the best thing for sunburn you'll ever use. Women want beautiful skin, as you all have. Look, if you look at the ingredients of every high dollar skin oil, it's coconut oil. So anyway, just want you to study that a little bit. So let's play the game. We've got a food supply and we don't have utilities. How many of you guys know what a P-38 is? I don't mean a pistol. One of the things that, this is a P-38, it goes on your keychain. You can open countless numbers of cans. This is military issue. So the first thing you need to realize is you're gonna need a can opener. You're going to need one for your bug out bag. You're going to need one for your house. I'm not saying you need a P-38. You need something that's not electric to open a can. That's a new thought when we start thinking non-electric, isn't it? Can you prepare what you've put up? Have you practiced that? How long is it going to take you to cook it? Do you have? Will it be nutritious? Will it be satisfying? Will the leftovers perish? And then don't forget your vitamin supplements that are of utmost importance. We are almost to the break time here. Let me cover this real quickly. I want to get into the fourth commandment of preparedness, and that is livable shelter. When we get into whether we should stay put or evacuate, my idea may be a little different than some of yours on that, and I'm sure yours is as good as mine, but I through hiking experience and putting stuff on my back and walking up mountains. Livable shelter. Fourth essential, we need adequate shelter. It could be a tent, it could be a home, but we must have adequate shelter. We've got to maintain, what is it, 98.1? You know, we've got to stay dry. We've got to stay healthy. So if you currently are looking for a home, or maybe you're thinking about moving to a different place, here's some great ideas I want to share with you. We went through our first flood when we lived in Gretna, Louisiana, a suburb of New Orleans, which is below sea level. And you'll notice I put, what is the possibility without electricity? Some of you need to be aware that if you live in certain areas, there is a municipality that uses a pump system to keep your neighborhood from flooding. What happens if the electricity goes out? So flood maps of the utmost importance. Say, well, that'll never happen to me. Probably not. Then you need to recognize what's your fire hazard. We all love shrubs. We all love trees. We love to live around woods, or a lot of us do. What's the fire hazard? Nobody's going to come to put it out. And then what about those trustworthy neighbors? Who are they? Is the place you're living defendable? Is there a water source nearby? Is it a solar suitable site, which most places are, unless you have trees totally covering the roof? And then what are the usable attributes? Does it have cross ventilation? Some of the modern homes today are built strictly because you'd be knocking your windows out if there's a situation, because you got to get that cross ventilation. Does it have a garden spot, place for chickens? Is there storage space? Is there a strong or shelter room that you can get into or convert to have a strong room? What about the sewage system? I know people that one of the things when the pumps go out or electricity goes out or there's a loss of utilities, that if you do not have a check valve between you and the sewage pumps, they will pump your home full of sewage if certain portions of the pumps are working and certain aren't. Have anybody ever heard of that in this room? Raise your hand. We know someone personally that happened to right here in Huffman, Texas. They flooded their home with sewage. Wouldn't that be nice to come home and suddenly you have the new cesspool? So this is something you want to check into if you're someone that is an extremist and thinks there may be a loss of utilities. If you are on a sewage grid, you need to know if you have a check valve in the line or if you want to put a ball valve in the line so your home doesn't get flooded with sewage. Just a thought. I know it's a great one, huh? And then, of course, the place that you're living, does it have gas, natural gas available, electric, or do you have a fireplace? In other words, a way to maintain some type of utilities without outdoor utilities. That's about all I'm going to say about that. But just be looking around saying, what can I do? Is this something that is a place? Let's play the power game. It's out. Now, how nice is this? What can we do to go ahead and get ready now in case we ever lose power? Put in some windows, whatever. And I'm going to close after this portion. We will have made it halfway through. And I think that you will find this, probably as in the next most important thing after water and food, next to medical necessity. And that is sanitation and hygiene. We do not realize, living in a civilized, well-maintained country that we live in, that sanitation and hygiene is one of the reasons that our life expectancy is up, because it keeps disease down. And I recognize that none of us, myself included, give much thought to when we go in there and we push that handle down, what actually has to go on to get rid of all these things. So number one, all of us probably know this, but just real quickly, let's say the utilities go out. Now, one of the, in my opinion, the sad things that happened whenever we went to the new spray field type and aerobic systems for our sewage or our septic systems is the fact that they require electricity. Therefore, should the utilities go out, we're stuck. The old gravity field lines, they may not work well when there's a lot of flooding on them, but they work forever. You don't have to have electricity to make them work. If you have no water in the house, you can still use your toilet if it is flowing into a septic system by just pouring a gallon and a quarter in the back of the tank or down the commode itself. So you can still flush a toilet if you have buckets of water, whether there's running water or not. And you say, this sounds ridiculous, but it won't in the next 3 minutes here, because sewage is the number one cause of disease in all the countries where people die. And when people start going to the rivers to wash because there's no toilet paper, and to the lake to wash because there's no toilet paper, disease will mount up so fast, which is no big deal if you got antibiotics. So, let me move on. This is your new toilet facility. I'll tell you something I use. It's embarrassing. My wife will say, I can't believe you said that. The best thing that I've found that's very comfortable is an igloo cooler, but I'll get off that. So anyway, airtight lid. If you get stuck in a situation, you've got to bury that stuff, and you need to keep track of where it's buried. 8 inches below ground, where it does not flood or have runoff into your garden or area people are going to walk through and then track it into your home. Other countries, the reason that, and my wife will let you know, in Africa, you take your shoes off because you don't know what you walk through before you go in the home. It's not because you're trying to keep the carpet clean. See, we got all this antibacterial stuff and all these antibiotics. We don't worry about this kind of stuff. Folks, this is what kills people every day. I can kill you quickly with just one case of diarrhea and no correct medicine. You're no match. All right, so what you're looking at is you can buy a plastic seat to go in a 5-gallon bucket. Let me express this. You're going to need, this is one of the things that you heard our survivor in Bosnia state, is you can't have enough toilet paper and you can't have enough garbage bags. Garbage bags are what you want to use. You can use duct tape garbage bags. You can use the toilet in your house because you can keep that clean, because that's going to be very important. But you need a way. Everybody with me? I know this isn't a pleasant subject. And then you're going to have some type of container to put it in until you want to bury all this. So you're going to need some type of sealed garbage can or whatever to where after you do this, you get the picture. Okay, old-time outhouse, if you've got a little property, or even if you don't have a lot of property, the big fall, 3 to 5 foot pit you dig, and you understand the rest of that concept. One of the things that will kill more people and a loss of civility, and people that are unable to have access and have not stored antibiotics, believe it or not, is the hands. Because in our hands, the thing you must learn is, and of course God's word, the reason the Jews lived through much of the plague, the back bubonic plague, was they obeyed his word and they washed. But you must wash your hands after you use the toilet, before you do food preparation, and before meals and any type of loss of civility. Unclean hands spread disease, and I hate to tell you this, it's through fecal and respiratory substances that are on the hands from coughing, sneezing, cleaning oneself, okay? And then you see a list of all the diseases. All of these diseases are brought about from toilet situations. So what we take for granted every time we sit on the throne is huge. It keeps this country healthy. But if that leaves, we don't realize it's something as that simple, and this is gross. Every person in this room is going to go about 3 pints wee-wee a day and 1 pound of number two a day. Now, you start adding up how many people are in your home. This is a part of preparation. You better have a lot of garbage bags, and you better have some place to put it. So once again, you can use the current commode you have. You just won't flush it. It'll just go into a plastic bag, and I've said enough. Okay, and so what you want to learn is after you have soap and things to wash your hands with, you want to take a 1 cup of bleach to 1 gallon of water. This disinfects the hands. I actually have hospital grade, I'm just getting rid of the last one that I had from Kingwood Medical Supply back here, stuff that wipes that you can't put on your skin, that kill 99.9% of any disease to wipe surfaces with back here. I've got several cases of those left. All right, let's move on and I'll close. The next thing that we recognize as we are closing out for our first break, whenever we get into sanitation and hygiene, is I know most of you don't remember, but some of us do, when grandma had the old Ringer washer. These products that you're looking at, you can go buy an old galvanized wash tub, or you can go to Lowe's and get the new plastic one on a stand. You got to have a way to do laundry, folks. Your clothes have to be washed, underwear and all that stuff. So these are items that you're going to need if we would lose utilities. And so as you're learning, this is the fifth level of preparedness, and we're already seeing that there are a lot of products that as we walk through this time of preparation, it takes some time to get all of this accomplished. One of the things that's of interest, you can still purchase the old wringer where you wring the water out of the clothes. And of course, how many have ever used a solar dryer? Anybody here ever use a solar dryer? It's a wire, you run it between two trees and clothespins. And, you know, it's amazing. When we'll be in Israel in June, it's against the law there to have a hot water heater. And just solar hot water and solar dryer saves an amazing amount. I said that to say this, I need to remind you. So you need to, while you can buy them, grab you some boxes of wooden clothesline clips. They're not hard to, they're not easy to come by. Kind of like strike anywhere matches. So go ahead and be thinking about, wow. And not only to mention, wouldn't it be awesome to just hang stuff out? You know, you could pay for a vacation if you just turn your water heater off, except when you use it, and start hanging your clothes out. Let me get off that. The other thing I want to mention to you is, if you'll look at this thing, it looks like a large toilet plunger. Down on the bottom of the screen, it has the big blue head. We recommend this. This fits in a 5-gallon bucket, and it sucks the soap and the water up through it and puts it back in. And it is a plunger. It is actually made to wash clothes. So look this up online. We'll give you the website for it later. Also, you can still buy the items that I'm saying. That wringer is about $156. It's rather pricey. So you've got to have a way to do laundry. Just because there's a problem doesn't mean that you can go on with never washing your clothing. All right. Solar shower. We're talking of hygiene. I have personally used these. They are great. Has anyone ever used one of these solar showers? They're cheap. They're 10 bucks. You can get them at Walmart. Actually, they're probably cheaper than that. The black bag heats up. I mean, hot. You leave it in the sun. It's got a spigot. You hang it in a limb or wherever. We hung it in the front of our tractor and put a sheet around and got under that puppy. And you can take a nice hot shower every night. But there's a product that has come out since I've done this class that I just found out about, and I want to share it. And I think it'd be a great investment, and it's not really expensive. It's made by Econotemp, or Ecotemp, and it is limitless hot water shower, hot water supply, 1.4 gallon per minute. And what you're looking at the unit there on your right. That's the unit itself. It hooks to propane, and so what you're seeing to the unit to the left is just a guy that took a two-wheel dolly, mounted it on the top of the dolly, and put his propane bottle underneath. Now, the only problem with this is you need 20 pounds of water pressure. So for those of you that have ever calculated on building a water tower, it's not that hard to do, or a place to elevate water, 0.433 for each foot of elevation, and as far as calculating the pressure drop in a pipe as to what it will increase pressure-wise to put out to keep your faucets and everything working. But anyway, if you've got a way to put any type of water pressure to this, so if you've still got a hose or a well that you can pressure up, or one of those pumps, man, you and your family can take unlimited hot water showers. What's that worth in a situation? And this thing's portable. People take them camping and everything. They're about I've seen them as low as about $119. I've not used one, but the people that I know that have, there's no complaints about these things. So there you go. All right. And with that, we will take a break. And if anyone wants to get with any of our vendors or food or whatever, we'll meet back here in about 15 minutes. I'll give a 5-minute warning. Thank you.